Hey, Perf Bites listeners, before you get started on today's episode, we'd like to mention the generous support of our sponsor, Flood.io. Imagine your load test plan runs great with just 10 threads, but now you need 100,000 users. Distributed load testing seems like a good idea, right? But now you're wrestling with out-of-memory errors and blocked RMI ports, and your load generators outnumber the target servers for JMeter. You are throwing knives in the dark with limited feedback and mandrolic reporting. Say hello to Flood.io. Launch Flood Test using JMeter or Gatling, view and share test results in real time, scale out your own grid across the globe in minutes. Flood.io, distributed load testing for everyone.
It's time for Perf Bites.
What the f*** is Perf Bites?
The fourth square meal of the day.
Don't put my Perf Bites.
Waffles.
Microwave ready.
Blobbity blah. Blobbity blah.
Add nutritional value to your brain.
It's time for Perf Bites with your hosts, Mark Tomlinson and James Pulley.
Perf Bites.
Whatever.
Hey, it's time for Perf Bites, and welcome everyone to the solstice episode in 2014 of Perf Bites. I'm here broadcasting while the sun is setting at the northernmost point in the northern hemisphere. It's exciting, James. You can say anything you want at this point.
Oh, I'm still in awe of watching that sunrise.
Oh, really? Did you go see the sunrise on solstice?
Yeah. It wasn't really intentional. I happened to be awakened by animals in passion at that hour.
Oh, my. And by animals, you don't mean your neighbors.
No, I do not mean the neighbors. It may have been some of the neighbors' cats going at it, but it got me up just in time to watch the beautiful sunrise.
Right. Well, two cats engaged in what the wasn't it the Illuminati with the chalice and the blade, the whole Da Vinci Code thing? Didn't we learn all? Was that the cats were reenacting a ceremony to protect the bloodline of?
Sure, we'll right? go with that one. Yeah.
Well, welcome everyone. We have a special guest today is Mr. Bob Westcott, who is the author of the Every Computer Performance book. Bob, welcome to Perf Bites.
Thank you very much.
Now, we're really excited to have you join the show, mostly because one of the things that James and I dream about is actually taking all of the content that we've yakked about on Perf Bites episodes and maybe convert them into a book format. And as I review all of our episodes and famous shows that have high ratings and stuff, when I dig through it, I find almost the exact same things are already written in your Every Computer Performance book. So I think we're maybe by the end of this conversation, we may bless the Every Computer Performance book as the official Perf Bites performance guidance book. Does that sound all right?
Ooh.
Yeah.
That would be fun.
Wouldn't that be fun? I think that would be fun.
And remember, everybody, it's a lot cheaper to send a book through the mail than it is to put a consultant on a plane.
But it depends on the consultant.
Even a really bad consultant.
Either that or Bob's not charging enough for his book. So, Bob, welcome to Perf Bites. And maybe if you can tell us a little bit about your time working in performance engineering and performance work that brought you to the idea that a book would be, this one could be the culmination of what would be all of your career's experience. And you had worked for Hyperformix. I think I remember you from working at Hyperformix years and years ago.
Yes, I did work for Hyperformix. And those were fun years. That was down in Texas. So I had some amazing barbecue down there. But where I really got into performance was at Stratus Computer. I spent about 15 years working there in the performance field. And it was a fun and glorious time. We were changing the world one machine at a time. And I was doing a lot of the performance work and also teaching the operating system performance class.
Okay, cool. The chapters within this book, really, they go beyond kind of the basics of what somebody would learn, but they definitely give you conceptual capabilities all the way around from the operating system all the way up into the applications. Tell me a little more about what you saw in sort of different authors in the industry when we recommend different books. What kinds of things did you see and what made you want to write the book?
Well, honestly, whenever I would look at performance books, they always seem to fall into two great categories for me. One was the impenetrable mathematic book, you know, that looked like somebody took their PhD thesis and threw it up into a breezy 800 pages of math that I couldn't do. And I used to think, well, I'm too stupid to do performance work then because I can't read this. And then after working in the field for a couple of decades, I realized nobody can do this. Or, you know, there's a handful of people that can do this, and bless them, I'm glad they can do this. But there's a ton of people doing wickedly important performance work with simple algebra and a handful of very simple formulas and a bucket of common sense. And I thought, oh, okay, you know, maybe I don't have to freak out about the, you know, 3.5 page impenetrable, 3.5 inch thick impenetrable book. And the other ones were, you know, all the ones that are like Windows 95 performance tricks, where it was on a very specific technology that was probably, you know, if it was there in your office, it was part of your world. And I tend to think of, you know, there's the part of the computing world that you care about and your boss will yell at you if you don't do it right. And then there's everything else. And your performance world may contain just one computer, or it may contain a vast array of technologies. And you know, I'm grateful for people who write those Windows 95 whatever books, you know, those very specific application technology ones, because somebody's got to do the research. Unfortunately, when I've read many of them, I often got the feeling that, well, let me back up a little bit. I used to work for a couple of computer companies, and I'm the kind of guy that wanders into people's office and say, hey, can I talk to you about what you do here? And so I had this long conversation with some documentation people. And one day, you know, we built up a friendship, and I said to them, can I ask you a difficult question? And they go, yeah. I says, can you tell me why all documentation sucks all the time? And he said, oh, yeah, I can explain that easily. And he says, it's because the documentation has to be ready when the software ships. That means that I have to go in and bug the developer just at the moment they're under the maximum level of stress and have the minimum amount of time to give me anything. So most of the time, all I can do is write a sentence that reads something like, the Dingleberry coprocessor is the coprocessor that handles dingleberries. You know, the sort of self-referential sentence that tells you nothing about, well, if there are more dingleberries, is that good or bad, you know, and that sort of thing. And so even the ones that are written for a very specific technology, oftentimes they have a lot of stuff that you just kind of go, well, that didn't tell me anything. And I found them kind of disappointing.
But it did probably tell you one or two things about dingleberries.
Yes,
that you maybe didn't know.
Yeah, and you know, now I'm the, you know, the second level world expert in that. But you know, those are the two kind of books I found when I was out there working. And you know, depending on the book, you'd usually find it beside the monitor or under the monitor, depending on the thickness of the book and if it would lift the monitor up high enough. And you know, but yet I had this, cause see, I kind of bumbled into, performance as a career, because I was hired at Stratus and they said, would you like to teach the internals course of the operating system, or do you want to teach the performance course? And that was my choice. And I had about 30 seconds to make that decision. In my tiny little brain, I said, teaching the internals course is a nightmare because there is no question too picky and low level because it's called the internals course, right? And so I thought the performance course would be a, you know, a nice little, you know, constrained field that you can actually learn and master. And then what I found out is when I showed up that my natural tendencies as a scientist worked very well in performance. And so I would look at some meter and start experimenting with it and come up with a theory and then gather more data and find out my theory was crap. And I would disregard, discard it and then try another theory and off I'd go. And eventually I'd really understand what that meter was telling me, even if I couldn't talk to, the low level engineer that actually designed it.
This is something I think that James and I both go on about, is people missing out on the idea that there is the word science in computer science, and within science there is a method to actually doing research and learning, and in some cases it can be overly academic, like the guys you mentioned who are writing 800 pages worth of gobbledygook looking tattoos or strange scripts that in functions and mathematics and Raj Jain, and they all bow at the altar to Raj Jain. Still, you can apply a scientific method even though you may not go 100% quantitative in what you're doing, just enough quantitative to fuel your learning. And I think that's something I picked up from the Every Computer Performance book as well, is make it accessible to people who might eschew doing something scientific because it looks mathematic. They can still follow a method and a process to learning and take very, like you say, very wicked steps and wicked things in performance. I love that word.
Yeah.
And Bob, as you've seen in public forums, I know you and I both participate on LinkedIn, the industry still suffers from this, it's a tool issue, or I need to know how to master a tool, not a process or a concept. And I think it's to the detriment of the industry. We find an awful lot of performance testers who are just really bad testers, who haven't mastered the scientific method. They don't have a scientific mind as they experiment, as they come up with a hypothesis, as they look for expected results. And this is really dramatically impacting the value of our profession to our external stakeholders. It's really embarrassing in some respects.
Yeah. I once worked at a customer, and in part of my career, I was the guy they would fly in to solve the performance problem or do the capacity plan or whatever. And so I show up and they say, well, we're having a problem. And I go, okay, why don't you tell me where it hurts? And they say, well, our users are all complaining that, whatever they were doing slowly, but, the machine is almost idle. And I asked him, I said, is it always bad or just bad at some times? He says, only sometimes is it bad, not all the time. I said, okay, that tells you something right there. And I said, so how are you figuring out the machine is idle? And they brought me over and they showed me whatever third party metering package they had fallen in love with. And it was, a cavalcade of colors and graphs and gee whiz stuff that the salesman just drool over.
It's a magic rainbow of performance. Yes.
Oh yeah. and all the meters were near zero. And I walked over to a regular terminal and typed in the top level easiest to use command, and the machine was, running out of, one disk drive was white hot and it was running out of CPU and stuff. And I went, these meters are broken. And they looked at me like I had just told them they're going to turn off gravity on Tuesday. and I said, look, this is the real operating system meter, and it's telling you you have a white hot disk and you're this and that and the other thing, and they're like, oh, we've never seen those. Why? Because we bought this and it was so expensive we were ordered to only use this. And so okay, it becomes their reality, but they never stop to think, like, it's fine at midnight and bad in the middle of the day when their peak load usually happens. It's like, and the meters don't move. So, you should be more suspicious here.
So there's something that I think that I picked up in what you said about going to speak with another person. Maybe it was a DBA and maybe it was a systems person, a storage person, and basically asking them, hey, can I ask you a question? And what's interesting is that interactive social skill is sometimes rare with people who put the blinders on and focus on their number or their tool that they were told to use, and they don't let alone think out of the box. They don't walk out of the box and go talk to someone else and say, can I relate to you in a certain way? And this is something that I also really like about the way you wrote your book. It's approachable to people conceptually. They can, you can have a conversation with the DBA, and both of you together may not really know much about, let's say, networking. But you know that there's an entire data engine in their world. You may not even know what a data engine is, but you can start relating to the idea of, the app is going to send you stuff and you're going to send back stuff. It doesn't matter whether it's an app or a database or it's going to disk or whatever. You have a way of helping people understand, on one hand, the core critical concepts for performance, but also you tell stories in the book about how to relate to other people in other disciplines. And is that something that was intentional in your writing, or is it just part of Bob Westcott's storytelling capability?
No, I think it's really important because, you know, regardless of where you are, there's almost always somebody around you that knows something you don't know that you might find useful. And if you can wander in and talk to them about that in a reasonable way, oftentimes people will share. Now, there are some idiots who believe that, you know, I am the holder of all knowledge and I cannot let it out. And, you know, you kind of go, wow, sucks to be you, and go on to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
But most right. people, if you, especially if you happen to work at a computer company or a software company, and you're going to go talk to one of the other wizards, my biggest hint for you is this: make an appointment. Don't call them on the phone, and for God's sakes, do not drop in on them in their office, because they're programmers. Sure. They're holding 50,000 variables in their head, and you walk in and say, hey, can I talk to you for a minute? And poof, all that went away. And all they want to do is say, yeah, get the hell out of my office.
Yeah. Or catch them at the water cool, make an appointment to go out to lunch. And I think you'll find that even if you have that more open discussion, or where it's maybe there's a lot of analogies back and forth between you, their world and your world. Oddly, I think a performance engineer or a performance tester, they sort of simultaneously have to have six different worlds. And it's not just like a two-way analogy. They have to have four or five, six-dimensional analogies that'll actually help people connect the dots. And I like that, because part of your book actually digs into how to connect parts of the system, where I see that really missing in the engineers that come out of school today with a computer science degree. They don't get access to the experiences that you bring to the table, or James and I, through forums we reach them. But I'm happy to see a new book that's accessible and not just another Raj Jain. And I'm really glad you didn't give it the title of like the art of something. I'm not a big fan of the art of, you know, this. We're still in the science world, even though we're part of the arts and sciences department.
Well, you know, I mean, a long, long time ago, I liked to bicycle, and I found this wonderful book, you know, the Everybody's Bike book by Tom Cuthbertson. And the thing that was beautiful about it was the fact that it told you how to fix your bike, regardless if it's a Raleigh or a Schwinn or whatever, right? And yeah, that's what this book was based on. I said, you know, out of all the things that I know about performance, strip away all the operating system specific stuff, you know, make the math, you know, you explain the math as I used it, and which is really at a very simple, you know, algebraic level. I mean, if you can handle R equals S divided by 1 over U, I mean, you know, it's like add, subtract, multiply, divide, and you're good to go.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, you can do fantastic things with this. And, you know, I in some sense, the people I wrote this for are not really performance people, because if you're any good at all at performance, you know, you've kept your job for a couple of years, then you may have figured some of this out for yourself. I, you know, in some ways I'm writing this for almost anybody who's, you know, kind of rubs up against that performance wall and like, you know, programmer or sysadmin, like, well, you know, all of a sudden they say, we got to make sure we're going to, because a lot of people get thrown into performance. They used to be an X. I mean, nobody goes to school and says, I'm going to be a performance analyst. They're sysadmin or they're a programmer and, you know, there's a performance problem and they're marginally good at it and off they go. Well,
and you can't, if you wanted to get a degree in performance, you can't. It's just like some of the trades in the world where you can go to tech school, but you're still going to do an apprenticeship. You're still going to go through a journeyman process to become a master. And, you know, to somebody like you at the master level, guys like you and me and James and a few of the great senior engineers are doing things like podcasts and books, and we're making it accessible where the industry has a gap in that. Bob, we need to take a short break for a word from our sponsor. James, you remember these guys, right?
Yeah, you know, these are those Nuco guys. Hosting for perfbytes.com has been provided by Nuco, New Centers of Excellence in Performance Engineering, PowerTest Professional Services, The Script Farm, LoadRunner by the Hour, Videra Tech, Cloud Architect, and No Load Test. For more information, go to www.nuco.com or call 703-856-8187. I think that's a good place to discuss.
And James, I think you had a question for Bob.
Yeah, Bob. So every author looks at their audience and says, okay, my audience looks like X, and I want to communicate Y to them, you know, doing the basic algebra here again. And so you probably have three or four or five items that you'd like to communicate to your readers and saying, hey, these are core and essential. If you take away all the fluff, if you take away the funny stories, if you take away the terrible mental images that I've left you with, I want you to walk away with at least these four or five items and say, hey, this is what the book is about, and this is going to help you in your job.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you a question, though. Is this stuff I want them to know from the book or stuff that I want them to know in terms of career and performance? Or can you give me a little more about that?
Sure. It could be either one. I know Mark and I have a number of themes that we run through on the show, and they're mostly process-based. Some of them are communications-based. Some of them are anti-patterns, but very rarely do we have a pure tool show. You know, we've had a couple here and there. And so if you look at what Mark and I do, we're mostly process guys on what we talk about, because we feel that that's a significant weakness in the industry. And a lot of what we do is we talk about process with a particular theme, but I know, Bob, you're a big proponent of the scientific method, given your background, and how do you bring that theme forward as a part of your book, as an example?
Okay. Well, let me go first to a dangerous thing. Then let me talk about something mathematical: queuing theory. Right. As we've all seen in various performance books, you know, queuing theory is this impenetrable mathematics. And I can't do it. Most people can't do it. I'm down with that. But the thing that I think is important to understand is that there are some general things that pop out of queuing theory that are always true. And, you know, you can use to think about how you want, think about the performance work in front of you. And, you know, I mean, one of the things that I always try to emphasize with people is it's the slower the thing you're dealing with, the lower the maximum utilization you can handle before the response time starts to really be a pain in the butt. Every computer, whether it's 10 years ago or 10 years from now, has the slowest part. And whatever the slowest part is, that's the one that you want to have the lowest utilization on, because basically, you know, that what you're doing as the load comes up is the the wait times are getting longer and longer, and what you're waiting for is the service on the thing. And if that's the slowest thing, then that's going to give you the biggest number. And so, you know, like, you know, 10, 15 years ago, when I was all hot and heavy doing Stratus stuff and that sort of thing, when you went to disk, that's what killed your performance right there. You know, every time you had to wait for the disk, it's like, you know, 300 years later, the IO comes back. And so that was, you know, so when I tell people, well, your disk can only be 50% busy. And they'd be like, what? Why can't I use the other half? And it's like, well, you can, but the response time pain is going to be astronomical.
Yeah, the basic understanding of how to identify a bottleneck, and how you describe that, Bob, actually begs a question I have, which is, how do you encourage a developer, a designer of an application, an engineer who's creating their idea for how to solve the problem or automate whatever they're going to do, that there's a general platform limitation? Let's say you're going to go to the cloud and maybe network is your slowest component, and they have to start thinking about, how can I use that slowest resource the least before they write the code? And I think a lot of performance testers miss out on the idea that, hey guys, if you're going to go writing code, be sure to avoid this particular kind of call, because that's not going to work well. Try to write your code to do other things. And I think, what's your tip for a performance tester who's maybe just learning how to influence and communicate with performance developers in a performance context?
I would say the best thing you can do is hit them over the head with the data, right?
Okay.
You know, if you see them, you know, saying, you know, right here, I'm gonna stop using magnetic disk and go to punch cards, and you know, and they say, oh, but you know, they're fault tolerant. Once you punch them, they hold the image for thousands of years. We really need that in the design. Okay, fine, and then you know, just do a little tiny bit of math showing, you know, how long it would take to read in 4 gigabytes of punch cards, and then say, are you really willing to do that, to use punch cards to store images on Flickr, for example? There are not enough trees in the universe to do this. And usually you can just do a little math if you have a little data, but I hold programmers in very high regard. It's not something I was ever any good at. I can write little 100-line ones, but, you know, the big ones, it's like I stand in awe of those people. But like anything else, they have their little blind spots. And if I can use my performance stuff to find out some little, you know, if you do this, it's going to hurt a lot. And look how much it hurts. And they go, wow, I had no idea it hurts that much. Oh, and you go, yeah, it hurts a lot. And they kind of go, oh, I think I'll, you know, try paper tape then, and off they go.
Yeah, but it to that point, you're the impenetrable math of an extended Raj Jain, either Little's law or queuing theory, queuing calculation. That whole idea is, sometimes there's engineers who came out of a master's in computer science who are like, well, if it's not complex math, then I don't have to respect this. But everyone who sits in traffic every morning, and you're going from 3 lanes down to 2 lanes down to 1 lane in the construction zone, and it just gets you don't need expensive math to show, hey, this is painfully slow. It's like, you can respect the fact that, yeah, even if it's not complex. Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes it's just as simple as running a utility that consumes CPU or spins their local disk up at a high level of activity so they can see what happens, yeah, on their local machine.
Yeah. Yeah.
When that resource is restricted.
Yeah, and I used to do that all the time. You know, I'd sit down and, you know, chew up some fraction. Like, for example, when I would need to figure out, you know, if all the transactions go through process X, you need to figure out how many transactions per second can go through process X. You can't look at the CPU usage of process X, because processes do other things besides CPU. And so what I would do is, oftentimes process X was parallel. There'd be X1, right, X2, X3, X4. And I'd say, okay, we're going to shut down everything but X1, X2, and then let the load come up in the morning. And when the, you know, when the calls started pouring into the conference center, you know, to the call center, then we'd start all the rest of them. And then, you know, we'd look and see how much we did, and we'd say, okay, you know, through those two processes, we were getting 50 transactions a second. So each one of them maxes out at 25.
And you would be doing that live in production.
Yeah, which sometimes, and you know, and see, the other thing is that, that literally every company I would visit, you'd have to figure out, who are you, right? Are you... Are you willing to mess around with the users, or like, oh no, we can't possibly touch the machine? And, you know, how freaked out are you by me starting and stopping things and that sort of thing? And some people are like, yeah, sure, whatever, go for it. And the other people were like, you know, performing a rectal exam before they let me into the machine room. And, you know, everybody played the game differently. And so I would do what I could do with what I had where I was.
Right. So, Be brave, dive in, and start doing stuff is a new mantra. Actually,
yeah, quote here. You know, and adapt to your local world. You know, if you're a consultant wandering from company to company, that's a different thing than, you know, you're always in the same company trying to, you know, solve this year's computer performance problem.
So to kind of bring it back into this particular writing, I know this is something that's the culmination of all of your experience, plus a few other folks that influenced you, obviously, along the way. You do have another book, which is The Fundamentals of Performance Engineering. It may be kind of rare as a little older book. If folks really love the Every Computer Performance book, they could go check out this other book as well. Mm-hmm. But it's a little different. There's different authors and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. It was a group of authors that worked together at High Performance, where you mentioned you knew about me from. And, you know, I wrote a couple of the chapters. Keith Smith, who is the co-author, wrote several chapters, and everybody else contributed a chapter. And I nagged them relentlessly to get it done, because I thought, wouldn't it be nice to see my name on the spine of a book? And you know, all of a sudden one day a FedEx box showed up and there it was. And, you know, so that was interesting. But that was for what High Performance was doing at the time. And I wanted to write a really wide open book you know, captured how I work through performance monitoring, capacity planning, load testing, modeling, and then lastly, presenting your results, which is a key place where a lot of people lose in the performance game.
Yeah, it's actually a very important part of the book is how you communicate, which I think is an important part of what you can learn from this book. Is not only that the concepts are accessible and you can pick up even a simple concept and actually provide tremendous value to your company, but you're doing it in an interdisciplinary way, and I think that's really evident in the book. So Bob, thank you very much for joining us. It's great to have you on the show. And again, if folks ever wanted to get a hold of you moving forward, you've since retired a bit to the state of Vermont, and you have a lot to do with ice cream nowadays, I understand.
Yes. After 30 years of explaining computers to people, I now work as a part-time tour host at Ben & Jerry's, and it's my distinct pleasure to talk about ice cream to the visitors we get. We get about 300,000 visitors from all over the world every year, and it's just a joy to meet them and to tell them about ice cream rather than CPUs and disk drives.
So Bob, if you had to have an official flavor for performance testers and performance engineers out of the Ben & Jerry's lineup, what would it be?
Ooh, that would be good. I'm thinking it's going to have to be Hazed and Confused.
Hazed and Confused. That's a wonderful name for an official ice cream for performance testers.
We'll go get some of that. We'll bring it to our next outing. So maybe if single malt scotch was not unhealthy enough for you, then you can OD on Hazed and Confused ice cream. Not that you need the calories. And I'm curious, Bob, just to say, when you're helping people and talk and learn about ice cream, are you tempted every now and then to sort of analyze the performance of maybe the machinery moving through the manufacturing of the is there a queuing analysis going on in the back of your head, or is it?
Honestly, we have a lot of queues at Ben & Jerry's because in the summertime people come in droves.
Oh yeah,
and I actually find myself staring at that and saying, you know, how could we speed this queue up? You know, what if we did this? And I am sort of thinking of like we opened more scoop windows and had somebody directing and whatever, and then I go no,
don't do it, Little's Law. I'm not thinking of Little's Law. Yes, exactly. Be here now. So you can take the guy out of computer performance, but you can't take performance out of the guy. Bob Westcott, thank you very much for joining Perf Bytes.
You're welcome.
Well, hey there, Perf Bytes listeners. Once again, you've come to the close of another frightfully enlightening Perf Bytes episode. And as always, we'd like to thank each of you sincerely for taking the time to listen to the show today. Obviously, special thanks to our guest, Bob Westcott, the author of the Every Computer Performance book. You can actually get a copy of the book at Amazon or iTunes or Powell's and Barnes & Noble. The only thing we ask is that you promise when you're done reading the book, you actually give it away to a colleague or a friend and pay it forward and then, of course, buy another copy of the book. So, Bob, thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
And as always, I want to say thank you to my mother for tuning in. We know we have at least one listener, and that always makes us feel good.
Yes, thank you, Mom. I will obviously extend my thanks to the sexy Irish voice of Perf Bytes, my wife Martha, for driving all the way back and up to Connecticut and back over the weekend so that I could just work the entire way on my personal hotspot. We would be remiss if we did not send our thanks out to the great sponsors of Perf Bytes, Flood.io and Cubic Loadpack, for their continued sponsorship and support of the Perf Bytes show and the Perf Bytes community.
Mark, today's show is powered by the Sinclair ZX Spectrum. Bob, I can tell that's a machine that you remember well.
Yeah. Yeah, I go all the way back to core memory and paper tape.
Yes, and putting markers on the side of the thing. Yes, I was saying. Anyway, and please remember that all the content of this Perf Bytes episode is copyrighted and protected in the same manner as Ben & Jerry's intellectual property for all the swirls, chunks, cores, and crap that's in the chocolate chip cookie dough recipe, and also like the repasteurization process that heats the show audio to 180 degrees so that proteins unfold and interconnect. That's what gives Perf Bytes that creamy, velvety wonderfulness. Did I get that right, Bob?
You did.
For more information about Perf Bytes, please visit the show's website at www.perfbytes.com or follow us on the Twitter and the Facebook. And of course, you can always subscribe and listen to Perf Bytes podcast on iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and probably anywhere else that carries a podcast. Just open up your favorite listening app and search for Perf Bytes. Click the subscribe button or your favorites button or whatever you have. And we appreciate the feedback.
Yes, keep listening. Keep in mind that the Perf Bytes show and staff are supporters of the Practical Performance Analyst, the Performance Engineering Book of Knowledge, the Computer Measurement Group, the Workshop on Performance and Reliability, and of course, the Software Test Professionals community of software testers. We hope to see you at the next STPCon conference coming up in November. It'll be in Denver, Colorado, in the USA, where we'll have the first 1 mile high live Perf Bytes broadcast, giving away a pair of shoes, and heck, we might even give away some Ben & Jerry's Hazed and Confused ice cream, which may now be the official ice cream flavor of Perf Bytes.
And don't forget the Perf Bytes annual barbecue is in Monroe, North Carolina, July 4th, so just a couple of weeks away. Please let us know if you plan on attending and if your preference is pork or chicken. And Mark, everybody gets a door prize.
Everybody gets a door prize, which would be awesome. I'll be at CAST next month in New York City teaching the performance analysis. Actually, I believe they coined the whole thing the art of software testing or something crazy like that. So it's the art of performance analysis workshop. And then actually, I'll be a content owner at the next workshop on performance and reliability, which I think is in Boston in October. So look that up at the Whopper, WOPR, Workshop on Performance and Reliability, which would be really great. Thanks again, Bob, for joining us for the show. And thanks, everyone, for listening to Perf Bytes. We'll see you next time.
Have a great week.
Bye.
You can be more enthusiastic than that, Bob.
Oh, sorry. It was a pleasure being here, and my whole life has changed. And I may go back to college now and get a real degree and job.
Because
of the moment I've spent with you.
I recommend a degree in art history.
Yes. I promise. Just promise us you won't get an MBA and go to work in marketing, because nobody should go there.
No, my wife has, or you know, I have a standing medical directive. If I do that, it's time to terminate.
Yes, no, I